We're talking about landfill waste this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. There has been an influx of household trash that is accumulating as more people stay at home amid the pandemic. This phenomenon is happening across the country. Waste management is the collection, transportation, and disposal of garbage, sewage, and other waste products. How many garbage bags do you and your family fill up in a week? Is it significantly more since the pandemic started? And if so, what are you sending to the landfill? Are you a sanitation worker? What's your job been like with COVID? We're at 800-642-1234. John Welsh is director of Dane County Department of Waste and Renewables. He's also a UW-Madison civil and environmental engineer. John, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We also have Brad Wolbert, who is Waste and Materials Management Program Director for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Brad, welcome to you.
Thanks, Kate. Glad to be here.
Well, Brad, let's start with you. Are we following here in Wisconsin this national trend and producing a lot more trash?
Well, it's a two edges of a coin here, two sides of a coin. So, yes, we're producing more residential waste, but we're producing less commercial waste because a lot of businesses have been closed. So I think it balances out roughly. John can give you more of an exact idea on that, but it's up for household and down for commercial.
Well, John, with more residential people, you know, more people staying at home and, you know, fewer restaurants open, businesses open, not accumulating that much trash on the commercial side, does it balance out?
Roughly, it does balance out. It was a bit of a drop for sure at first at the beginning of COVID, but we've seen that come back and level off, and Brad's correct. You're obviously, everyone working at home, you see a lot more residential waste and a lot less commercial waste. That also just puts a strain on the budgets for municipalities and for these waste hauling companies, you know, that much more waste to handle that was not expected.
Well, John, put some numbers behind this. You oversee the Dane County landfill. How much trash are we collecting?
Sure. Dane County at our landfill, we estimate that we collect approximately two-thirds of all waste generated in the county at our landfill, and we landfill between 225,000 and 250,000 tons of waste every year, so anywhere between 800 and 1,200 tons a day.
How many truckloads, garbage truckloads?
We have between 300 and 400 customers or truckloads of waste come across our scales every single workday.
How have operations at the landfill been affected by the pandemic? What's changed?
Yeah, most people probably don't think about their garbage when they put in the garbage can and it disappears each week. But obviously that has to go somewhere, and we're really an essential function. Obviously, society would notice very quickly if we didn't collect garbage for several weeks. So we, of course, had to maintain operations throughout this, and that meant a lot of additional precautions. Team meetings and safety meetings are all outside in the parking lot with staff standing 10 feet apart. And we've implemented a lot of things with social distancing to maintain social distancing between our staff and our customers, implemented touchless payment systems, things of that nature, really to ensure the safety of our staff and our customers. Additional sanitizing, keeping only one staff person in equipment, sanitizing cabs in between, and those types of things.
And are they wearing protective gear out in the field?
So we generally have one staff person inside the cab of equipment all day. If they have to get outside that cab and interact with staff or other customers, they have to wear a mask. Our frontline workers working with customers, say, for example, at the scale or doing payments, if they're outside interacting with customers outside of the building, they have to wear masks as well, yes.
We're talking about the trash we're producing during the pandemic. That's John Welch, and John is director of Dane County Department of Waste and Renewables. Brad Wolbert here as well. Brad is the Waste and Materials Management Program Director with the Wisconsin DNR. Your questions about the trash and your tendencies here during the pandemic. How many bags do you and your family go through a week? Is it significantly more since the pandemic started? And if so, what are you seeing more of going into the trash? trash, and what are you deciding to recycle? Join in at 800-642-1234. Brad, what are some of the most common things that are being disposed of? What lands in the trash most often?
There's a wide variety of things. For landfills, it has to be solid waste, so it can't be hazardous waste, it can't be electronics. There's a number of things that are banned from landfilling. So what ends up in landfills instead is paper waste, but oftentimes that is recyclable. So we don't see as much of that as we did before the recycling laws went into effect. Food waste, lots of mixed plastic type things, plastic bags and things like that. Just a wide variety of materials. But like I say, there's several materials that are not allowed to go into landfills. Another example of that is yard waste.
Yeah, what are some of the things that you try to keep out of the landfills?
Yeah, yard waste is one. Recyclable paper, aluminum cans, steel cans, recycled plastics like milk jugs and detergent bottles and water bottles, things like that.
How about glass?
Glass is also on the list of landfill banned items because it's so recyclable.
And is it so recyclable? Is glass a pretty straightforward thing to recycle?
Well, glass is inherently very recyclable. It can be melted down and reformed into bottles many, many times, pretty much indefinitely. The economics of recycling glass are tough, though, because glass is heavy, and it breaks apart when you crush it, and then it gets into machinery. A lot of the recycling sorting is done by machines, and so when glass gets into wheels and belts and things, it's not a happy thing. And in addition to that, just the heaviness makes it expensive to transport long distances. So in theory, yes. In reality, it kind of depends on location.
How effective are we in keeping those items out of landfills?
We've done a pretty good job in Wisconsin, actually. We keep track of the tonnages that our sorting facilities collect and sort into marketable materials. And those numbers have stayed pretty steady since the recycling law went into effect around 1990. It's in the 20% range of the tonnage for landfills that we actually divert to recycling. Which compares fairly well with other states.
John, what are you seeing at the Dane County landfill as far as the materials that are going to the landfill? What has changed since COVID?
Yeah, great question. The waste coming into us is really a reflection of what society is buying and throwing away. And people don't think of this, but it's really a barometer of the economy as well. So we saw waste volumes dip by about 10%. When COVID lockdowns really started. We've seen that come back since then. We're definitely seeing less construction and demolition waste, which is probably, again, a reflection of how much construction is starting up. We're also, just looking at the waste itself, you're seeing more plastics. So think about people eating out versus dining in at a restaurant, or using plastic silverware and water bottles and plastic bags at the grocery store. Plastic gloves and medical waste. So
we're gonna touch on the plastic medical waste here as landfill waste. And economic indicator, John Welch, director of Dane County Department of Waste and Renewables. Brad Wolbert with the Wisconsin DNR, the Waste and Materials Management Program Director. And you, what do you think about our overall waste tendencies and habits? How can we improve? Medical waste and plastic is surging. Do you notice the influx of medical waste where you work? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about our trash amid the pandemic. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The World Economic Forum says coronavirus waste has become a new form of pollution as single-use personal protective equipment, the PPE, floods our oceans, COVID-19 has had a number of unexpected impacts on the environment, reducing recycling, it says, and increasing the use of plastic around the world. Do you work in a hospital or clinic? Do you notice more medical waste since the pandemic struck? Are you able to reuse and sanitize your PPE? What is single use? Join in at 800-642-1234. Our guides are Brad Wolbert and John Welch. Brad heads up waste and materials at the Wisconsin DNR. John is a UW civil and environmental engineer and director of the Dane County Department of Waste and Renewables. So, John, talking about medical waste and plastic, how would you say that has changed in the waste stream since COVID?
Yeah, just it's a little tough to dig into each waste stream, but just looking at it qualitatively, you think about going to the doctor's office or getting a COVID test, for example, and every time now they're changing gloves, they're changing masks, they're de-gowning, and all that waste is going into the garbage every time. And so you have a lot more of these encounters where there's a lot more personal protective gear that doctors need to wear. And that's just, of course, leading to more of that plastic waste. You know, it's a single use of that plastic that then immediately goes into the garbage.
How is medical waste treated in contrast to residential waste?
Yeah, definitely a very different process. There's a whole set of regulations and a whole team of folks at the hospitals that deal with that to follow all the regulations. But generally speaking, if you have something that's infectious or contagious, contact with blood, then that's going to a specialized facility where it's either autoclaved or it's incinerated to make sure that we're protecting the general public.
Brad, I understand that back in May, the DNR released its new rewritten hazardous waste rules package. Can you explain what changes have been made?
Well, there's a lot. Some of that moves away from medical waste, and it's not in effect yet, I will say, also that we expect that to go into effect on around September 1st. And it gets a little complicated. I will just warn you in advance. But generally, there are three new aspects to the hazardous waste rules. And let me just remind folks that hazardous waste is management in Wisconsin and in the United States is really governed by the federal government, and the states are delegated to run the programs. And it's a cradle to grave process. So because of the hazards of hazardous waste, they want to know where it's generated and where it's going, how it got there. So there's a lot of record keeping involved, and the rules are quite complicated. But the three new rules in that Wisconsin is adopting, these are federal rules that will go into effect when Wisconsin's regulations sort of take those into account in September. One is designed more for improving recycling of hazardous waste. So it's called the definition of solid waste rule, and it suggests that there are some hazardous waste that if they are legitimately recycled, they don't need to be considered or handled quite as stringently as hazardous waste. So that's one. A second one is the generator improvement rule is what we call it. And for hazardous waste generators, typically businesses that generate a certain amount of hazardous waste, this allows certain practices that are easier to comply with to be undertaken. So, for example, a clinic can ship its hazardous waste to a hospital, the parent hospital, and all that hazardous waste can be shipped from the hospital, and that eases things on the clinic.
So that's a streamlining,
point.
Okay.
It is a streamlining thing. And there are some things in here in terms of record keeping and labeling of containers and so forth that actually end up being a little more stringent. So there's a balance. The whole point is to make sure that this material doesn't end up in the environment or even in one of, in John's landfills, for example, they are not allowed to accept hazardous waste from businesses. The third change that's going to be made has to do with pharmaceuticals. And that will allow, for example, some of the big box stores that sell over-the-counter nicotine patches, and this is just one example of this, that nicotine is a listed hazardous waste. And so It has to be handled very carefully, and those who know about it know that it's quite poisonous. It's very toxic. But for some of the well-known wastes like lozenges and patches that are used for smoking cessation programs, the over-the-counter versions of those will no longer need to be handled as hazardous waste.
We are learning about the waste we produce and what happens to it. Brad Wolbert there, Waste and Materials Management Program Director with the Wisconsin DNR. John Welch is here as well, Director of Dane County Department of Waste and Renewables. You can join in. Do you live near a landfill? Which one? What is it like? Are you a healthcare worker, perhaps? What have you seen as far as medical waste as of late? And what materials are you throwing away more? How is it handled? What questions do you have about hazardous waste and how that is handled? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's take a call now. Carolyn is joining us from Madison. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. I remember back when recycling just began and there were bins around town where we could separate. We had to separate. We happily and gladly separate paper and glass and plastic and aluminum cans and tin cans into various bins. I just wonder, is there any way we could make recycling glass separate from everything else somehow?
Carolyn, thank you. Could we separate out glass in some way? John?
That's a really great suggestion. There's been a trade-off with recycling as it's evolved. Yes, we used to separate everything into individual bins or bundles, and Madison and many other communities have moved towards what's called single stream, which means everything is put into one stream or one bin. There's trade-offs there. It's led to a much higher participation rate. Obviously, if you make things easier, the general public will more likely participate. But the trade-off there has definitely led to more contamination within that stream. So if you have one jar of spaghetti sauce break open, now it's contaminated a lot more things. And glass is one of those examples where it's much harder to recycle glass in a single-stream system. So I think there's definitely a trade-off and a balance there. Some municipalities do still sort glass separately, and they are able, generally speaking, able to recycle it or find higher-end markets for that material. So it's something that it's being looked at because the glass recycling industry is definitely transitioning over the last couple of years.
Carolyn, thank you for that question. John, can you help us understand, though, the difference between medical waste and what is considered hazardous waste? Where do you draw the line?
I think that's probably a question better asked of Brad. It really falls to the state and federal regulations in terms of how that waste is classified.
Yeah, Brad, go ahead.
Yeah, we have a regulation that classifies what is considered to be infectious waste. And it is really any, material that is that is capable of transmitting disease. But then we go into some detail about that. And so, bulk body fluids, for example, would be one thing. Things like, and this gets a little, for the squeamish, I have to just tell you that medical waste is not a fun thing to talk about for those folks. But
we're bracing ourselves. Thank you. As breakfast continues.
Right. Articles, protective gear, for example, that are spotted with blood, those would not be considered infectious waste. So there is a distinction. And then but that may be medical waste. So hospitals, clinics, veterinary clinics, even pharmacies are required to separate out their infectious waste and handle that separately from their regular trash. And that regular trash can go to the landfill, but the infectious waste can't. And anything that goes into that infectious waste bag, even if it's not itself infectious waste, becomes medical waste. And so you get a little mix of that stuff in there, and you want to minimize that because, as John said before, it costs money. That has to be handled separately and at greater expense. So that has to be sterilized or treated so that it's no longer infectious. Another good example of infectious waste is sharps, needles, lancets, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Even microscope slides that are made out of glass.
Well, in some restaurants, you see the separate disposal bin for those items.
In a restaurant now, though, that's up to them. They
okay.
don't need to be, they wouldn't really be generating infectious waste. Although, I will say in some restaurants or airports, you might see a sharps container.
Yes, yes.
And if that's what you mean, then yes, that needs to be handled separately. And just on the subject of contamination and sharps, I just want to put in a plug for folks to remind people that when you generate sharps at home or in an office setting or whatever, those do need to be kept separate. When they end up in the trash or in the recycling, they really pose a hazard to our waste management workers. And so that does happen sometimes. Sometimes someone will keep them in a detergent bottle and put them in the recycling because detergent bottles can be recycled. That's really a very dangerous thing for our workers.
Brad Wolbert, Waste and Materials Management Program Director at the State DNR. John Welsh, Director of Dane County Department of Waste and Renewables. Back in a moment. We're talking about our trash here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A recent Wall Street Journal headline says, single-use plastic is back in the pandemic era. Demand for plastic bags, plastic wraps, and other hard-to-recycle items has surged amid worries about COVID-19, and efforts to fight the virus are boosting sales for plastic makers. Are you concerned about what we're sending to landfill? Are you recycling more, less, unchanged since the pandemic? Have you tried to reduce your trash, or is it difficult with competing stressors right now? Join in 800-642-1234. John Welsh is here. He's director of Dane County Department of Waste and Renewables. Brad Wolbert works for the DNR as the director of Waste and Materials Management Program. Let's take another call now. Louise is with us from Middleton this morning. Hi, Louise.
Hi, good morning. My question is, where should we dispose of these disposable masks and the little plastic gloves that some people wear to go to the grocery and that sort of thing? I don't know exactly what to do with those.
John, what should we do with them?
Yes, those materials should be thrown in with your normal trash with them, and then making sure that your bags are tied before placing those in the bin. Those really don't, unfortunately, have a place in a recycling stream, and they don't fit within that definition that Brad had earlier about infectious waste. So the best thing to do is to place those in with your normal trash. And just a quick plug or a reminder, too, to folks that please do place those in a garbage bin. We're seeing increased incidents of these being found, as litter out in the environment, plastic gloves and masks making their way into the environment. And, of course, we need to try to make sure we're keeping our waste in our waste bins and making their way to a landfill.
Brad, how big of an issue is that, is litter?
Well, I live downtown in Madison, and I can tell you that John's right, there are masks on the ground. It's uncanny, really. I don't understand how people just are walking down the sidewalk and decide to discard a mask in the middle of the terrace there. But I don't know that it's a public health threat exactly. It's certainly unsightly. But John's right also that this, when generated at a household, these materials can go into the household trash.
Brad, decades ago, there were thousands of town dumps and other disposal sites across Wisconsin. Now there are less than 80 landfills. How did we do that reduction?
That happened in the 70s and 80s. There was a growing sense that the town dumps could contaminate groundwater. A lot of them burned their waste as well, and that produced air pollution. So over time, Wisconsin developed a program to require some standards for landfills that proved to be too expensive for a lot of the small towns, and so they closed their landfills, and Wisconsin also required some planning to prevent landfills from leaking, some engineering design and things like that. Then at some point in the early 80s, the federal government came out with standards, some of which were based on Wisconsin's regulations, actually, that required design features for landfills. And because those were expensive, a lot more landfills, small dumps closed. And today it's just more economical for folks to run larger landfills in the United States.
Well, let's take another call. Jill is joining us from Madison with a question. Hi, Jill.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my my call. And actually, mine is more of a comment or a share. I happen to be a nurse at one of the local hospitals in Madison, Wisconsin. And I just wanted to share that there is a pharmacy initiative called USP 800, that I believe was initiated in 2016. And the reason for the USP 800 initiative was to identify medications that are considered hazardous in both their exposure to, you know, patients, staff members, but also the environment. And so our hospital is in compliance with USP 800, where we identify those medications and we know, you know, the proper way to handle them to keep patients safe and staff members safe. And that includes sort of how they're excreted, so for example, in the urine. And then also if we have extra or remaining of the medication, where to dispose of them, or if we had a spill, how to take care of that.
Yeah, Jill, thank you so much for sharing about USP 800. How does that, Brad, impact hazardous drug waste?
Well, I'm not familiar with that, so I'm going to look into that. when I get off the phone here.
Jill, thank you so much for your work. Brad, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that a lot of the material that sounds like USP covers is also covered by our hazardous waste regulations as they apply to hospitals. A lot of medications are quite toxic, or they could even be ignitable if they're carried in an alcohol medium. And then some are even corrosive. You think of chemotherapy drugs. And so, a lot of medications that are handled by hospitals are actually classified as hazardous waste and have to be, managed that way.
If you're just joining us, we're looking at the issues around the trash we produce, residential, medical, hazardous, how it's changed during the pandemic. We have Brad Wolbert here, John Welch as well. Brad is in charge of waste and materials through the Wisconsin DNR. John is a UW civil and environmental engineer, director of the Dane County Department of Waste and Renewables. You can join in with your questions about the waste you produce, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Kimberly now, joining us from Fox Lake. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi.
Hi.
So my question is, right now, all these restaurants, even ones that are sit-down restaurants, they're operating at 25%, but everything comes out on something that's disposable, a single-use container. I was wondering if it's being discussed, like, what's going to happen once they go to a higher capacity. That's going to be a lot of trash coming through from the restaurant. Is there anything being discussed, like what the possible solutions to?
John, we'll start with you about these single-use plastics we're seeing in restaurants.
Yes, we're definitely seeing an increase in that. And as Brad mentioned earlier, it's really, unfortunately, competing priorities right now. Is, you know, I think first and foremost right now, everyone is trying to be as safe as possible in terms of health for their customers, for their workers. And so that's really the priority right now. And unfortunately, it is leading to a lot more of these single-use plastics in restaurants and other industries as well. The hope is that as we come out of the pandemic and return to whatever a different normal is, that we're coming back into a society that is valuing recycling, valuing kind of that cycle and that chain of products, and hopefully leading to less plastic and less waste long term.
Brad, do you have further insights on this surge of single-use plastics at restaurants?
No, I've seen it with my own eyes, though, and I know that John's right about the amount that's going into landfills, and I think it is just a balancing of sort of caution by the restaurants and a need to be perceived by customers as being, you know, absolutely safe from a health standpoint.
John, how is space doing at your landfill? How much time and space would you say is left before it becomes full?
Right now we have approximately 7 to 7.5 years of life remaining at our landfill. We are beginning a permitting process to do an expansion there, which could buy us another 3 to 4 years. But after that time frame, we really do not have any more space or life left at that site.
So then what happens?
So waste is still going to be generated. People are still going to roll their garbage cans out every week. And so, unfortunately, that means we do need to be looking for a new site, for a new landfill. And we can go into that more if you'd like, but we really aren't looking just for a landfill. We're looking for something more holistic in terms of future waste management.
Brad, what does that future holistic look when you start to design another landfill?
Well, John's got a fairly holistic system there right now. They don't do, I don't believe, any significant recycling, but he generates compressed natural gas from the landfill gas, which is an unusual thing for a landfill to do in this state. When you site a landfill, there's a state regulatory process that ensures that the landfill is going to be put in a place that it's not going to cause environmental pollution. And if there's additional operations at the landfill, let's say a recycling sorting facility, that might make a lot of sense from an economic point of view.
John, can you explain this offloading station and biogas, what is produced at the landfill?
Sure. If you leave your garbage sitting out in this type of weather for a week, obviously it starts to smell, and that's, you know, your garbage starting to break down. When it gets inside a landfill in an anaerobic condition, which just means there's not oxygen deep inside that waste pile, it starts to break down further, and it produces gas. Organic material break down and produce biogas. It's just gas made from biological material. And that gas is about 50% methane. To give you an idea, the natural gas that runs your water heater in your furnace is about 98% methane. So we have an energy source, and really what we're doing is we're collecting that gas, and we're actually cleaning it up. In our case, we're injecting it into the pipeline where it can be compressed down further and then turned into compressed natural gas, or CNG. So in our case, we're actually selling we're cleaning up our landfill gas, and then we're selling it to Quick Trip, and they're making vehicle fuel locally and throughout the state off of landfill gas.
John Welsh explaining it, director of the Dane County Department of Waste and Renewables. Brad Wolbert here directs the Waste and Materials Management Program at the DNR. Spending the hour on waste management, looking at how the pandemic is causing a spike in plastics use. Would you characterize yourself as a wish cycler? Looks like it could be recycled, but really, that greasy pizza box? Come on! What questions do you have about recycling? What do you want to know about where your waste goes and how you could cut down on how much you produce? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Cities of all sizes are reporting an increase in residential garbage due to people staying at home amid the pandemic. And nestled in those garbage bags are pandemic items like disposable masks and gloves, takeout boxes, wipes, plastic grocery bags. Still time to talk about our waste streams and the changes you've seen during COVID-19. 800-642-1234. John Welsh is a UW civil and environmental engineer, director of the Dane County Department of Waste and Renewables. Brad Wolbert is in charge of waste and materials at the Wisconsin DNR. So, Brad, here comes a question for you. Carl from Oconomowoc called in, couldn't stay with us. Carl wants to know, how do you properly dispose of surplus ammunition?
Oh, boy. that's a tough one. I would call the clean sweep in the county and ask them that question.
What is clean sweep?
Clean sweep is a project that many of the counties across the state have. It's funded in part by the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And that allows people from households to bring in hazardous waste, hazardous materials for proper disposal. So a lot of paint, a lot of solvents. But they have really deep knowledge on all types of different materials that come in, and that would be the place I would start on that.
John, anything to add there on ammunition?
Yeah, we do see that come into our clean sweep from time to time, or we get requests from that. And generally speaking, because of the nature of that product, the explosive nature of it, it's best to call your local sheriff or police department, and they do usually have programs set up to be able to take that, those materials.
Let's take another call. Mary in La Crosse. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I've been wondering, what happens to the sharps when you get a shot at the clinic and you see these sharp containers around in different locations, restrooms, whatever? Was wondering what happens. Are they recyclable, or where do they go? What happens to them?
Mary, thanks. So this picks up on where we last left off on sharps. John, do you want to start?
Sure. Generally speaking, of course, those are handled as medical waste. And so those go through that separate process. They need to have some type of sterilization. So a lot of times that's an autoclave, or it can be a medical waste approved incinerator. So those waste typically end up either incinerated or chopped up and then autoclaved, and typically are not recycled.
Mary, thank you. Let's bring in Carol in Green Bay. Hi, Carol.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I am interested in recycling everything I can, and I do take plastic bags that I sometimes have to accept at a grocery store back to the grocery store where they have receptacles to keep them. But I wonder, are the bags that you get with other things like fruit and all those other items that you buy, are those able to be recycled in that same way as long as they're rinsed out?
Brad?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes, many of them are. So let me give you a short list. Newspaper bags, dry cleaner bags, the shopping bags that you mentioned, usually the wraps that come around if you buy a case of water bottles, for example, that plastic wrap that goes around the whole case. All that stuff can be generally put in those store bins. And while I'm on this subject, I'd just like to say that that's probably the biggest problem in our recycling sorting facilities is when people try to recycle plastic bags, just loose plastic bags, or when they put their recyclables in a plastic bag and put that plastic bag in the recycling bin. Both of those situations are they really cause problems at those sorting facilities. So no plastic bags in the recycling, please.
Carol, thank you for that. Brad, I want to ask you, where are we headed as we manage waste and materials? What does the future look like?
Well, what I'd like to see the future look like is more of a circular economy where we recognize the value of materials and try not to generate single-use materials. In some other countries, they've made the producers of packaging responsible for ensuring that packaging gets back into the commodity stream. We've taken baby steps on that with our recycling programs, but I think we can look to European countries for what I hope would be the future in the United States as well.
John, in the few seconds we have left, are landfills changing much?
Yes and no. There's a lot of technological advancements to help protect the public and the environment. But as Brad just mentioned, the goal there is we're transitioning away from waste management and looking at more as resource management. These are resources that are being wasted. So how can we look to the forefront of that and plan for other materials like food, plastics, mattresses, and some of these other things that we can pull out of the waste stream and capture those resources again?
Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Brad Wolbert is Waste and Materials Management Program Director at the Wisconsin DNR. John Welsh, Director of Dane County Department of Waste and Renewables, also a UW-Madison civil and environmental engineer. The tourism season is ramping up on Washington Island, an isolated community off the mainland from Door County. As Rob Mentzer reports, the island's experience is a window into how Wisconsin's tourism industry is adapting to COVID-19 with a mix of optimism and anxiety.
The 10 a.m. ferry to Washington Island is full. It's the only way onto the island, about 7 miles off the coast of Door County. In the early days of the COVID-19 crisis, there were just 2 ferries a day, and they mostly carried packages and freight, not people.
We had to go back to like 1950s or 60s to get kind of ridership numbers that low.
Hoyt Purinton is president of the Washington Island Ferry Line. He says ridership has picked up, but it's not back to what he'd call normal.
Typically this time of year, in the past 3 or 4 years, we would be running, we'd have 21 or 22 trips scheduled today. We have 11 or 12.
Tourism accounts for something like 80% of Washington Island's economy, which means the island needs visitors. And like a lot of places in Wisconsin, people here are trying to figure out what a safe tourism season looks like in the age of coronavirus.
Early in the crisis, there was a lot of don't come here kind of stuff. Keep your virus down, downstate. Don't come here. We're vulnerable.
Bob Atwell is CEO of Nicolet Bank. He lives in Sturgeon Bay and spends weekends on Washington Island. He says there's a tension between people whose jobs depend on tourism and those who'd rather not see visitors this year.
It might work for people who came up here, retired, and had their money when they got here, but how does it work for people who need to make a living while they're here?
Of course, it's not just retirees who worry that hosting thousands of out-of-town visitors just isn't safe. Tate Remke is a bank teller and a barista at Red Cup Coffee House.
I have 2 elderly parents. I have a lot of elderly friends. I worry for the community and all the people that I love here.
Lots of tourist towns rely on summer business, but Washington Island's peak season is really just 2 months long.
The money is made in July and August on Washington Island.
Richard Toby is town chairman. He says business is starting to bounce back. One example, he and his wife rent out a historic family house to vacationers.
We opened that up on Monday last week, and by Thursday we were booked through the second week of September solid. I mean, just gone. So as far as people wanting to come to Washington Island, it sure looks like there's plenty of folks available.
It helps that a lot of what people want to do on vacation in Wisconsin are outdoor activities that health officials say are relatively safe. You can hike or kayak. You can ride around the island on a moped. Edgar Anderson, who owns a lavender farm on the island, puts it this way.
If there is a place to social distance, you're looking at it.
Wisconsin tourism has another advantage. Most people who visit here come by car. Tourism officials say families who've canceled air travel this year are likely taking local vacations instead. Sarah Gibson is an owner of Jackson Harbor Soup and Sandwiches. The restaurant looks out on Lake Michigan and northwest to Rock Island, a state park that's still closed.
I would say we are maybe getting closer to 50% of where we were at last year.
Gibson says she thinks the restaurant can survive on mostly takeout and patio dining this summer.
Yeah, you hear 50%, oh, that's not a lot. But the thing is, it's something, and we're here to maintain what we can.
She says she hopes the weather will cooperate. She hopes the spread of the disease won't require them to close again. And she hopes the tourists who visit the island town where she grew up will be considerate of others' health. Her business won't make what it made last year, but it just might be enough. Rob Mentzer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.